So I think kind of going out and comparing two different kinds of vaccines by, number one, talking to your veterinarian and seeing which one that they've had experience with and which one they would recommend, I think would probably be the first step when comparing those two products. And then I think number two, if say we're comparing two modified live vaccines, is reading the label. Because it's a modified live respiratory vaccine doesn't mean it's going to impart immunity or hopefully impart immunity over the same pathogens. So see what's included on the label in terms of what it's protecting against. So you might have two vaccines that are almost the same, but one of them will also protect against Pasteurella multocida, which we know can be a concern for feed yard operations. So that might be the one, if you're retaining ownership, say, on your calves, that might be the one that would be the best fit for your operation.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit ProEarthAnimalHealth.com today. Lallemand Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm your host, Brandy Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, Dr. Brandy Karish, Associate Professor and State Beef Cattle Extension Specialist at Mississippi State University. Dr. Karish earned both her master's and her PhD from Texas A&M University. In her current role, she works to provide applied research and training for beef cattle producers in Mississippi and across the Southeast to enable them to be profitable and sustainable. Her research focuses on management and nutritional strategies to improve the health and quality of cattle in the region. In addition, she serves as faculty advisor for the university's beef cattle herds and stocker cattle research programs. She owns MBK Cattle with her husband and two sons, where they raise Simmental, Simangas, and Beefmaster cattle. She currently serves as the Eastern Region Trustee through the American Simmental Association. She's a very busy woman. She and I go back many years, so I'm excited to have her today on the podcast on this episode, which is sponsored by Virbac. So Dr. Karish, thank you for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here today, Brandy.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. I know we've been on social media kind of back and forth, but I haven't actually seen you, you know, in about 6 years. So this is that was a long kind of hiatus, but it's nice to have you on the show again, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you. To start off with, for those who don't know you, if you want to bring us up a bit to speed, like on your background, how you got started in the beef cattle industry, your career to this point, kind of those kind of things.
So I tell people a lot when I talk about me, I do cattle for work and fun. And a lot of people think I'm crazy when I say that. But really, our hobbies are cows. And I'm fortunate that I have a husband and I have a family that think those things are fun, too. And are understanding when kind of our life revolves not just around our personal cow herd, but in terms of what I do for work. And working in extension, I think, is a lot of fun because basically I get to talk to people like you, or cattle producers. I had a phone call earlier today from a producer that were asking questions about finishing some cattle on his farm. And no 2 days are the same. And I think that's something that's really fun, really interesting. My background, I grew up on a small cow-calf operation in South Louisiana and grew up with registered cattle. And kind of that was where my passion has always lied with the Simmental breed. And then when I went to grad school, the time came for me to kind of pick a specialty. And I actually focused on nutrition in graduate school. So I did a lot of work with cattle efficiency and modeling and looking at ways to kind of make the cattle industry more efficient. And transitioned from there straight into my position here. One of the great things about working at Mississippi State is our animal science department and our vet school work so well together. So a lot of the animal health related research that I've done since I've been here at Mississippi State is really a credit to that relationship that I have with my folks and our team over at the College of Veterinary Medicine here, because they're really the experts when it comes to this kind of stuff, I think. And my job is taking that information information from the experts and from the research that we do and kind of distilling it down to cattle producers that they can apply on the farm.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virvac's new Bovigen Platinum Vaccines. These four vaccines deliver quality protection against respiratory and reproductive diseases in the vaccine combinations you need to protect cattle at every life stage. Bovigen Platinum Vaccines are comprehensive and safe, have consistent supply made in the United States, and are backed by a six-month guarantee in the Bovigen Platinum Protection Program. Start your platinum protection at us.virvac.com/platinum protection or contact your Virvac representative.
Well, with all the work that you do in health and veterinary medicine, like, it's very timely and appropriate about what we're talking about today. We're going to talk about like the importance of vaccination programs, how evaluating and comparing these vaccination programs. But I think before we dive into that, can you just share kind of like a benchmark, explanation of like, why is a vaccination program important in a cattle herd?
So I think it's really important to think about not just giving a shot in terms of a vaccine, but what's the ultimate end goal? The goal of vaccination is to develop immunity so that when those calves then face whatever we're vaccinating for, be it a respiratory pathogen somewhere along the way, then they're better equipped for that immune system to fight it off so that they don't succumb to the disease. And I think that's an area that can create some confusion a lot of times with producers. So our goal with vaccination is to set those calves up for success. A cool word that one of my graduate students at one point in time coined that I've used from time to time is we want to make them immunocompetent. So when we're setting those cattle up and having them go from one stage of the production cycle to the next, having them be immunocompetent means that they can face new bacteria or viruses in a new environment that they may have never been exposed to, and they're not as likely to get sick or unfortunately die in some circumstances.
I like that phrase, that immunocompetent. I think that's a very good way to put it down or to lay it out there. So as producers who are motivated to vaccinate their herds, how can they or should they balance the cost of comprehensive vaccination protocols against the economic risks of disease outbreaks, you know, in their herd or in their region, you know, and even perhaps touch on how does their end location play into this?
So obviously my focus is on the Southeast, and I know my environment here is very different from your part of the world in Kansas. Mm-hmm. Here in the Southeast, we've got a lot of small cow-calf producers where, you know, really defined management strategies might not be a focus. But I think we're starting to see that change because, I mean, let's be honest, the value of cattle today is just mind-blowing for a lot of producers. So I did some math. And if I pulled up, so a 700-pound steer that sold in Alabama last week, the average price in Alabama would have been $2,026 for a 700-pound steer.
Oh, my gosh.
So when you start thinking about keeping that animal alive and keeping it growing up until that point, I mean, that vaccination program, we're probably not paying enough for it, let's be honest, for what they're worth. And, you know, vaccines are relatively cheap in the grand scheme of things, in terms of a lot of our production practices. You know, tomorrow's tax day, right? So a lot of producers are probably crunching numbers from 2024 this time of year. And we all know feed costs are going to make up the bulk of their expenses for cattle producers. I mean, I don't like going to the feed store, even though nutrition is my background. But, you know, supplementation costs, and if we think about feeding hay or any kind of winter forage supplementation, and then what goes into putting up those kinds of things if a producer is doing it yourself. And then on top of that, getting those cattle to market and having them be more valuable, because research has shown time and time again that buyers are willing to pay more from cattle that are coming from a documented health program. And that's not, I gave them shots, right? Because we hear that a lot, you know, at coffee shop kind of gas station or wherever producers like to hang out is, oh, well, I gave my calves their shots. And a lot of times that's not really defined.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not. Yeah.
Yeah. So that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of producers. So kind of thinking of that end goal in mind, you know, keeping calves or for a cow-calf operation, keeping replacement heifers, what they're choosing to vaccinate their replacement heifers for versus their heifers that are going to the feed yard is going to be different versus their steers that are going on to the next stage. And, you know, a lot of producers are retaining ownership or looking at some freezer beef programs. So cattle that are going to stay on their farm for a longer period of time are going to have to be managed a little bit different from a health standpoint. I think risk and reward is a good conversation there.
Absolutely. You know, taking it there to what you were talking about earlier, like the cost of a, you know, of a 7-weight steer and how much that's worth. Like, if you want to just extrapolate that a bit more, like a cow, like to get a cow to the producing stage where they're having a calf, like you can't afford to lose a cow in this market either, because by the time you get a heifer to replace her, we might be, you know, I think at the very earliest, we're 3 years away from seeing a little bit of a pullback from these prices. But by then, you know, it's going to take that long. So the way I liken it is I live in Southeast Kansas and we have anaplasmosis. It is endemic through the plains and Missouri and Southeast Kansas. And
we have it down here in the Southeast too. So,
oh, well, I'm sorry for that for you, but you get it. Like, you know, I think the anaplasmosis vaccine is something like $9 a head or something like that. And you're supposed to give a booster later or something. So maybe you're looking to get one fully protected, like $20, which from a normal vaccine standpoint, you're like, gosh, $20. But with the prices they are, like if that cow dies from anaplasmosis, like that's a lot of money. And you're, you know, really kicking yourself in the pants there, wishing you'd spent that $20. So
even from a cow getting pregnant standpoint, you know, a lot of times we may get a cow pregnant. You know, in our herd, we do a lot of AI and embryo transfer, and we always do a pregnancy check, you know, at that 28, 30 day mark to see, you know, which ones took AI and which ones took embryos versus which ones might be bull bred. And there's always one or two cows that will preg check safe to that embryo or AI calf. Mm-hmm. And then we preg check them at the end of the breeding season after they've been out with the bull, and we have early embryonic loss. So yeah. Early term abortions is a concern. Abortions, open cows, are something that we can maybe affect with vaccination strategies for vaccinating for reproductive diseases. And that's something that I think needs to be taken into consideration when we're talking about balancing the cost.
Those are expensive. Those open cows. I don't mind feeding one when they're carrying a baby, but I don't want to feed you if you're not putting, you know, you're not doing your job. So as sad as that may seem, well, I know that, you know, I live in a feed yard state, even though I live at the other end of the feed yard, but I live in a feed yard state, and there's a lot of cattle come out of the Southeast that flow into feed yards up here. But I imagine that has to have, you know, cattle that are destined for a feed yard versus cows that are going to stay in the herd are going to have different vaccination strategies. So are there some differences in those strategies that you can recommend for cow-calf operations versus like a stalker or a feed yard?
Yeah, I think that there's some different strategies depending on kind of how those calves are going to be marketed. And I think it's, you know, it's taken a long time because a lot of Southeastern producers in particular feel very segregated. Like it's a long way from a lot of producers selling their calves at weaning until that calf is a finished, 1,600 pound steer. A lot of times in the feed yard, and there's a lot of disconnect because producers don't often see that end product. And there's a lot of, well, why should I care? Right. What happens next? But I think it kind of all goes back to dollars and cents. So buyers are willing to pay more for calves that are more likely to stay healthy and gain weight going and stay alive going through the production cycle. So it's important for cow-calf producers to consider. So but from a cow-calf producer standpoint, and ultimately, I always preface any talk of vaccination strategies is that's very operation region specific. And I always suggest producers to consult with their veterinarian. Having a good veterinary client-patient relationship or VCPR is something that I think is really invaluable because your veterinarian is the best source of advice for your cow herd, particularly if they're involved and they know what your goals are. They stand to give you the best advice on what you need to do from a vaccination strategy. So that's kind of my preface to before we talk about anything. But I think if we're talking about a cow-calf herd and replacement heifers that are going to stay on the farm, there needs to be some consideration in terms of timing of vaccination and type. So we talked about at the beginning, our goal of vaccination is to kind of set those cattle up for success by them developing immunity. So from a reproductive standpoint, we're talking about cow-calf and replacement heifers, those kind of reproductive core vaccines that we're going to be thinking about would be things related to lepto and Vibrio. And we kind of think of those a lot of times in terms of a pre-breeding vaccination. So we do two AI schools a year. And I'll preface, AI is artificial insemination in my world.
Yes, we actually had, I had somebody on the show last week, though, that we were talking about AI and AI, both of them, artificial intelligence and artificial insemination, like, and how that kind of worked together. So that was an interesting, you know, that was a interesting disclaimer to give on that weekend, that show, and then to be here and give this one. So anyway.
Yeah, I feel like we always, every time we talk about it, we always have to use the word cattle artificial insemination school, and we can't just say AI school anymore.
Yeah.
We have a section in that school where we have one of our veterinarians come in and talk about health protocols as it relates to AI protocols. And one of the big considerations, I think, is the time you put the seeder in to synchronize the cow to do an AI is not the time that you need to be given a pre-breeding shots. 6 to 8 weeks before breeding is when we recommend. Right. Because let's face it, so if that cow is developing an immune response, there could be some inflammation, there could be some fever that kind of goes along with that, and that's going to affect her ability to get pregnant with that next calf. And there's so much that can go wrong when trying to get a cow pregnant. We don't want to add more and more thing that we're trying to help that can make it worse. So 6 to 8 weeks pre-breeding is when we recommend, and those are annual boosters that we need to give before each breeding season to kind of keep that immunity strong. Because remember that not just are we trying to keep that cow healthy, but she'll pass immunity on, she'll pass antibodies on to that calf. And hopefully she's producing good quality colostrum and we'll get some maternal immunity in that calf for that first 3 months of its life. Before we start a vaccination program for that calf. So get me back on track, I guess, a little bit. I kind of get, you know, it's easy to kind of get off on some tangents on things.
That's okay.
No, I was going to say, lepto and Vibrio are kind of ones that we're considering. So you might think of something that would be a respiratory vaccine that also has a lepto and Vibrio added would be something, a consideration there. So it would include things like IBR, infectious bovine rhinotracheitis, BVD type 1 and 2 would be included in there, along with a lepto and a Vibrio would be things that we'd consider for a cow-calf and then replacement heifers. And then depending on where you live, vaccination for brucellosis, so that calfhood vaccination is something that would be recommended in some states versus others. So here in Mississippi, we're no longer required to calfhood vaccinate those heifers for brucellosis. So I've found that most producers are typically not doing that anymore. But I know a lot of Western states, brucellosis is still a major concern. So we're still vaccinating those heifers. I think there's also kind of a consideration, are you going to market those heifers at some point in time? Mm-hmm. Are they going to maybe go to a state that has requirements for brucellosis vaccination? So if you're selling bred heifers that could potentially go to a Western state that has a requirement for vaccination, that needs to be something that's kind of in the back of your head as you're making those considerations. I think every calf on the farm needs to be vaccinated for what you kind of consider a respiratory and a clostridial core vaccination. So those nursing calves would be especially susceptible to clostridial vaccines or clostridium. Blackleg would be the common name. A lot of producers will say, I mean, let's face it, a blackleg vaccine is cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's cheap insurance. But I have heard from some of our, pathologists and veterinarians that they're kind of seeing it start to pop up again in some is because people have said, well, I don't need to vaccinate that for that. I've never seen blackleg, so we must not have it, right?
Well, you've never seen it because
we vaccinate for it, right?
Because the vaccine worked.
Exactly. And it's cheap and it's very effective. So a lot of times you'll see that referred to as like a 7-way clostridial that would include a lot of toxoids. And I won't get too far in the weeds because it can get very technical when you start thinking about all those different strains, particularly if we're looking at steers, if you're banding them, especially having that clostridial vaccine include a tetanus is something that I think is of importance and consideration. And I won't get into like timing of castration and all those types of things. But BQA, I think beef quality assurance guidelines for that, I think is something that is very important to go back and reference. So you'll a lot of times see those, you'll vaccinate those calves for IBR, BVD, PI3, and BRSV. So that'd be kind of all respiratory pathogens and all basically we're looking at two shots for those calves. And then I think it's really important to pay attention to what timing are you giving those vaccines. So on the cow side, we have an option to give a modified live vaccine or a killed vaccine. And I think reading labels is something that's very important because if you're not boostering, right, and you give a modified live vaccine to a cow and she's pregnant, she might not be pregnant anymore.
Yep. You might have ended that.
Yep. So, and we just talked about how hard it is to get those cows pregnant and how valuable they are. So I think keeping those things pregnant and making sure we're following label instructions is something that's very important. So I think paying attention to label instructions, modified live versus kill. So the biggest difference in those, and I think especially if you're talking about it from a calf standpoint, a modified live vaccine is more similar to the virus that they're going to see in the wild, if you want to think of it that way. So you're going to get better immune protection from a modified live virus. A killed virus, you're not going to get quite the level of protection as you'd see. And I think reading the label, some vaccines are going to recommend a booster, you know, 4 to 6 weeks later. Some of them are going to be a one shot. So how many times do you want to run those calves through the chute? I think is a consideration because some operations, particularly like if you want to talk down in Florida or out west in very kind of extensive environments, running those calves through the chute multiple times might not be an option, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you got to gather everything off big country and it's, you don't have the help or you don't have facilities, like you don't have to do that multiple times.
Yep. So I think that's where sitting down and thinking about what's the goals of your operations and what's your ability to do things is something that's very important. So I think there's some basic kind of core vaccines that you need to consider or things you need to vaccinate against that are considered there as well. And then on top of that, if we have calves going to a feed yard or a stocker operator, what I'm seeing more and more is a lot of buyers and a lot of feed yards also want to see those calves get vaccinated for Pasteurella maltosida and Mannheimia hemolytica. So even probably 6-7 years ago, I didn't see that as much. So you could peruse a online catalog of truckload lots of steers. You're going to see those cattle are going to have, they're going to kind of hit those points of kind of what those buyers are looking for and what those buyers are wanting.
So you mentioned this earlier, and I think that this is really important. Well, there's a two-part question. The first part, you're talking about having a good client relationship with your veterinarian. And I just want to come back to that. What kind of questions should you be asking your veterinarian when you're going to plan for vaccinations? Like, just in general. Like, obviously, it's, I think there's some good general ones so you have that basis or that base relationship so you're not just calling your veterinarian once a year being like, hey, I need this. Can you speak about that?
Yeah, I think it's important for before you go and start asking them questions to know what your goal is for those calves. So if you're marketing calves straight off the cow at weaning, so obviously that's not a best management practice, but I'm seeing a lot of producers say those things are so valuable right off the cow. Why do I want to keep them for another 45 to 60 days, which would be kind of the most recommended timing to get them over the stress of weaning and kind of get them used to everything else. But selling those calves at weaning straight off the cow is very different from a 45 to 60 day backgrounding to keeping those calves for a few months. So you have that 700-800 pound steer that we referenced at the beginning in terms of having a $2,000 value. So how long you're going to keep those calves? Are you going to sell them as a truckload lot? Or are you going to sell them a few here, a few there? I think all of those are different considerations. And then you need to ask your veterinarian, okay, what are some things that you're seeing that we may not have considered that we maybe have not vaccinated for in the past that we maybe need to add to our protocol? So we talked about an anaplasmosis vaccine. That might be something that your veterinarian might have other clients that maybe he saw have lost some cows to anaplasmosis and might say, hey, this is a consideration. Maybe we need to do some surveillance and see, is this present in your cow herd? Do we need to vaccinate for it? It might be something if you're noticing a lot of open cows. Say, hey, doc, at preg check this year, our bulls were good, but I noticed we had a lot more open cows that weren't in bad shape, right? Because that's the first thing that I ask whenever I hear a producer has open cows is what kind of body condition score?
Right. Yeah.
Skinny cows don't like to get pregnant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So like there's a big difference between a body condition score of 4 and a 5, which would be kind of our ideal in terms of pregnancy rates. So we had them in good shape. So what could be some of the reasons that these cows aren't getting pregnant? So if your veterinarian is there at preg check time, he's examining those cows and he's maybe finding he or she is finding the old, they all feel good. Maybe there's something else going on, or maybe we found those cows are pregnant and then they didn't have calf, right? We preg checked them, said they were pregnant, and then they lost a calf sometime after preg check. Your veterinarian might say, okay, we need to reevaluate what reproductive diseases that we're vaccinating for. Are they watering out of ponds? Are they watering out of troughs? Those things might affect what vaccinations would be a big thing that we need to consider. And having that conversation with your veterinarian, what kind of risk you're willing to take on. So if we know we're going to vaccinate those cows every year and they got vaccinated as heifers with a modified live vaccine, your veterinarian might recommend, okay, we're going to use a modified live vaccine on these cows and we're going to booster them every year with XYZ. They're going to get 2 shots every year at pre-breeding whenever we run them through. Maybe you've had some issues with calves, baby calves getting scours or kind of some morbidity and health and death issues in baby calves. Your veterinarian might say, okay, we need to vaccinate those cows before calving so we can get an added boost of immunity in that colostrum that's going to those calves. So I think having that relationship there where they know your herd and your environment and your management style is just invaluable for getting that information about your herd and kind of it best fit your management strategy.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. It's difficult to like have that to call your veterinarian and be like, hey, what should I do if they don't like have an integral knowledge? Like they're not involved with your operation except maybe once a year when you need a prescription filled or something like that. Like, you know, it's just difficult for them to weigh in and give you solid advice if they don't have all the information that they need there.
I think that's a misconception that a lot of producers have about a veterinary client patient relationship is that if they're going to have that relationship, the vet's going to want to come out there to give every shot and do everything that needs to be done to those cows in a health related standpoint. And I'll be honest, most parts of the world, food animal veterinarians are hard to come by, right?
Yeah.
And they're running around and helping a lot of different producers. So if they can use their time wisely by giving you recommendations to keep those animals healthier and they know and are comfortable with how you're managing their herd, that goes a long way. So they have to come out, you know, to BSE your bulls and preg check your cows. And that might be the only times they have to set foot on your farm unless you have an emergency. I think that's an invaluable relationship.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like they're not trying to come out every time you work cattle. They're busy. You're not their only client. So that's a great point.
We've talked a lot about the cow-calf side of things because I think that's probably both of our backgrounds and we kind of lean more towards there. But if we're talking about, you know, stocker and feed yard operators that maybe aren't raising these calves and they're buying them in, I think that's kind of a different can of worms when we start thinking about vaccinating those calves when they arrive at the stocker operation. You know, whenever I got here to Mississippi State, one of the questions that we wanted to answer is how does the timing of vaccination kind of affect sickness and death in these high-risk calves? So we kind of have this neat model that we do a lot of grass-based stocker cattle research here. We have an order buyer that we work with, and I will say I need a truckload of 500-pound steers that are black white face, and they will go out and buy them from sale barns. You know, sometimes we learned that not all producers can count to two very well. So they might look like a steer, but they are in fact a bull or have one testicle in there. So that's been interesting for a lot of the students that we've had. One of the things that we learned is a lot of times those calves aren't necessarily vaccinated at the cow-calf operation. So that's the best place for that calf to develop immunity. But if they're not vaccinated at the cow-calf operation and they arrive to that stocker or even the feed yard already sick, say they're running a fever at that point in time and they're already kind of starting to break with some symptoms of disease, that's not the best time to then hit them with a modified live vaccine that's going to stimulate a really intense immune response. So we actually saw that those calves that we vaccinated on arrival that came in with a fever, so we assumed that they had already been exposed to something and were starting to get sick, were more likely to get sick and die. So considerations of, you know, how those cattle were managed prior to, even if you don't have any knowledge, and what's the relative risk factor of those animals, I think is something that's important. So we've done some of that work here, and Dr. John Richson at West Texas A&M has done some of that work looking at timing of vaccinations. And we found that maybe it's best to use maybe a killed vaccine or even delay that vaccination and give those calves kind of that natural immune response time to do its job. So not every set of calves that even comes into the same stocker operator needs to get managed the same.
Yeah. I mean, they could come from, like you said, you don't know what they was going on with them before they got to your place. And that's a risk, but that can also be like a tool in your box, or, you know, something to remember is that, like, I don't have to treat them all the same way. You know, that's the beauty of the beef industry, is that there is give and take and that we can manage them on an individual basis. It's very different. So those are some really good points you brought up. I, as you know, and this was really daunting to me when I first got involved in ranching, but there's a lot of vaccines on the market. And so you've mentioned this a little bit, like between a modified live and a killed, and like perhaps like which one you should do in that instance very specifically. But if people are looking at two different, you know, maybe they're looking at two different modified live vaccines and they're trying to compare them, like how should they compare them? You know what I'm saying? Like, because again, there's a lot of them. So how can you determine which one is best for your herd if you're looking at two vaccines in the same vein?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the easy answer is talk to your veterinarian, right? In terms of what they've seen the best response with. So all of these vaccines to get to market have to go through rigorous testing to prove that they're effective. So you'll see a lot of vaccines that will do the same thing. And you'll see a lot of veterinarians or producers have a preference for one versus the other. So I think kind of going out and comparing two different kinds of vaccines by, number one, talking to your veterinarian and seeing which one that they've had experience with and which one they would recommend, I think would probably be the first step when comparing those two products. And then I think number two, if say we're comparing two modified live vaccines, is reading the label. You know, because it's a modified live respiratory vaccine doesn't mean it's going to impart immunity or hopefully impart immunity over the same pathogens. So see what's included on the label in terms of what it's protecting against. So you might have two vaccines that are almost the same, but one of them will also protect against Pasteurella multocida, which we know can be a concern for feed yard operations. So that might be the one, if you're retaining ownership, say, on your calves, that might be the one that would be the best fit for your operation. So I think a lot of producers forget to do their homework beforehand and kind of think about what the goals are for their operation. So I think having that in mind before you get started is something that's very important. I think another thing to look at is, you know, some of those might be a one-shot product, so that doesn't require a booster. So if that's something that fits on your operation, maybe that one-shot product is the one that you need to go with. You know, we know that booster vaccination, so if you kind of think about it in terms of a curve, so we're going to get an added step up in immunity in terms of the times that we'll see when we give them that booster, when we give them that second response to vaccination. So always kind of that extra little bit is going to give us a little bit more, but kind of based on your management style, if that's not an option, maybe you need to do something a little bit different there. And, you know, we've talked about a lot. I feel like we referred to injectable vaccines a lot. We've talked about modified lives and killed. But there's also some intranasal vaccines out there that maybe be labeled for use in, say, a younger calf as well. So say you've got some bottle calves that maybe had could get exposed to something that maybe you don't have that continued maternal immunity, or maybe you're questioning, did they get enough colostrum or quality of colostrum? An intranasal vaccine label for use in a young calf might be something that would be a good consideration there as well.
Yeah. I mean, all really, really good things to keep in mind. Again, I don't think that we can stress it enough that there's no one size fits all thing in the beef industry, because just like in your things are very different where you're at than where I'm at. Cattle, there's, again, there's just no one size fits all. And I think that just ask your veterinarian. That's just wonderful.
And that's one of the cool things about the cattle industry, right?
Yes, we absolutely.
We raise cattle in so many different environments and still put a high quality steak on everybody's plate at the end of the day. And it's not cookie cutter, right?
No, it's not cookie cutter. It's the furthest thing from it. And I think that's one of the defining things in the beef industry we should be, characteristics that we should be really proud of, is that it's not cookie cutter. There's a million ways to raise cattle. And if you don't like if you're not having luck with one way, try another. So it's a really nice just little aspect of raising cattle. You've been in the beef industry like literally your entire life. And so has your approach to vaccination recommendations evolved over your career? Particularly as new vaccine technologies have kind of come on the market?
Yeah, most definitely. So my background was always cow-calf. I had never really been exposed much to the stocker industry or the feedlot industry. I'd done some work in grad school with, you know, finishing cattle in a research setting, but never really exposed to it kind of on a large scale basis. And then I came here to Mississippi State and we started doing some high-risk cattle receiving background in kind of grass-based cattle work. And, you know, I always kind of jokingly tell students, if something can go wrong with a cow, that it's going to happen in that five-weight stocker calf. Because some of the things that we have seen, it just scratch my head. How do they do some of these things and how do some of those things happen? But when you see a group of calves come in and, you know, it could be from year to year, you do the exact same things to them, and your sickness and death will be vastly different between those seasons or even those years. It makes you really think about, what are we doing to set those calves up for success? You know, how can we be better stewards to these animals? Because that's kind of the ultimate goal at the end of the day, is taking the best care of these animals to produce a high quality beef product at the end. So we've taken cattle that, you know, are high risk of high risk, right? Definition of coming out of small cow-calf operations. They'd be highly parasitized. They might have no vaccination strategy kind of coming into a stalker. And, you know, I have small kids like you do, Brandy, and yeah. I equate that receiving period, like that stalker in period in the beef industry a lot, like sending kids to kindergarten.
Absolutely.
They all share their diseases and then bring them home to you.
Yes.
But we're not sending those calves. We're just sending them all to kindergarten and letting them just continue sharing all those things around. And they're a lot more likely to get sick in that environment because everybody else brought their diseases from home that maybe your calves had never been exposed to. So that's where I think a good vaccination strategy is going to set those calves up for success as they're going into that next phase of production. So, you know, I mentioned it briefly earlier, but I think the timing of vaccination, you know, picking the right calf at the right time to give the right shot to, is something that we probably don't emphasize enough. So if we have cattle that are coming in to us, you know, we typically are going to see an outbreak curve where those cattle are going to get sick kind of within a few days of arriving. So within the first week or so, week to 10 days, and then we'll see a second outbreak at about 21 days, right? Mm-hmm. So after they've shared everything around, they're going to start getting sick again. And we know it's going to get worse if we commingle them. So if
right,
we get
absolutely.
A truckload in and then add another truckload to it a week later, it's going to kind of make it even worse. So considering what vaccines, what those cattle might need to build up immunity to, I think is something that's very important. And then thinking of what vaccines can provide protection without having an immune response or inflammation response that's going to maybe set the calves back even further is a consideration. That's something that I had not thought of. You know, we talk about, I'm our state co-coordinator for our BQA program, and we talk about vaccination and timing a lot, but it didn't really hit home until I started doing this research and experienced it myself kind of in the real world. And I say real world as much as we can in a research setting, because we try to control everything, but we try to make it as applicable to producers as much as we can. So I think, you know, I mentioned some things like vaccinating for things like Vanheimia hemolytica and Pastorella multocida. Some of the names of what we call those organisms has even changed over time from when I was in grad school to now. You know, as we learn more about these viruses and bacteria, we can classify them different ways and how we change those different things. So I think staying on top of those things, and your veterinarian's required to do continuing education. So stay up to date on the latest of kind of what we're seeing out there in the herds across the U.S., talking to other producers and kind of seeing what they have going on. You know, last fall was harsh for a lot of stalker producers that received calves. They saw a lot more sickness and disease. We don't really know what caused that. You know, is there something when those calves were in utero that we learned more and more about fetal programming affecting that calf as it goes later on in life? So much of the country was in a drought, right? If they're in a drought, those cows aren't getting what they need. They might be deficient. And that affects those calves from an immune function standpoint later on in life.
It seems like there's always a drought somewhere in the country, but there's a big difference between what you're feeding cows that are eating fresh green grass that in a pasture that's been soil tested and fertilized, and cows in drought country that are maybe getting by on second year hay because that's what they got. I mean, that's a big nutritional difference that you have to take into consideration. We're about to the end of, we've about to run out of time, but I want to make sure that you have an opportunity here to, this is really important. And so if there's a lot of misconceptions, and because vaccination programs are so different from herd to herd and area to area, you know, misinformation can just run amok. And so I'd love to hear that if you could clear up one myth about vaccinating cattle, what would it be?
I think the biggest one that I hear is, well, I vaccinated those calves. Why did they get sick? Right? because people equate, I give them that shot of vaccine to that means they're not going to get sick. And vaccination does not always equal immunity. Vaccination better prepares that animal to fight off disease should it be exposed to it, but it doesn't mean that it's never going to get sick. So, you know, we see a lot in people, right? I got the flu shot, but I still got the flu, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's that misconception there too. But if you got the flu shot, you probably got over the flu a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Than absolutely. Somebody that did not have the flu shot. And I think it's the same way in cattle, is that vaccination gives them the best chance to build up an immune response to fight off whatever they might face out in the world. But it doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to get sick. We're just trying to give them the best chance of success.
I think that's wonderful clarification. Very good point. That's applicable in cattle, but also in people, that vaccination doesn't equal complete guaranteed immunity. That's great.
It's time for our famous three.
Okay, well, we have reached the end of our lineup of questions for you about vaccinations and cattle health and management. However, we do ask the same three questions of every guest at the end of the episode. And I gave Dr. Karsh a heads up on these, so I'm not just like, you know, I'm not out of left field with her. But so the first one is, what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource? It could be a book, a website. Maybe my favorite answer ever was from a guest who said his wife was his favorite beef cattle related resource. So because she managed like the genetics of the herd and that kind of thing, and he managed like the data analysis. And so that's still my favorite answer. But, so what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource?
To be honest, it's the people. So I rely on my coworkers a lot. So other faculty in our department, other faculty in the College of Veterinary Medicine, in terms of, you know, we all work as a team. So we all kind of complement each other. So I mentioned my background's nutrition. So a lot of times when we do a research project, we're putting a team together that all complements each other. So I am a firm believer that a good nutrition program is going to set animals up to make a good immune response to those animals stay healthy. So I will set things up from a nutrition and a management standpoint, and then I'll rely on my colleagues that have a background in immunology and epidemiology to do it, what I call the hard stuff, from an animal health standpoint. And I rely a lot on what I hear from large-scale producers out in the real world. So I know a lot of people don't equate large-scale stocker cattle production in Mississippi together, but we have a lot of pretty large-scale stocker producers that run a lot of calves through, and we're talking managing small, high-risk cattle and kind of what are they seeing on their operations with those calves that they're running through in the real world, and how can we answer the questions that they need, I think is something that is really unique to what I get to do, and I think that's my favorite resource.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Great answer. Very timely isn't the right word, but appropriate, because you should stay curious and ask questions and utilize the networks of people that we have at our fingertips. So that's wonderful. The next question is, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle-related book or one that you are currently reading?
So some people might laugh at me for this, but I usually like to read for fun, and usually stuff that is not at all related to the real world. So like if you were a Harry Potter fan back in the day, I feel like you've kind of gotten into like the fantasy realm. So right now I'm reading the Fourth Wing series. That's Rebecca Yarros. There's dragons, there's war. It is not at all related to real life and real world. And, you know, that is just something fun to kind of take your mind off of everything else. I do cows for work and fun. But then I also like to read too. I've always been a reader, and I've always liked fiction, kind of out there kind of stuff that wouldn't necessarily happen in the real world. So that's kind of always, I know I probably should have like some big self-help book, like Brené Brown is my girl. I enjoy those kind of books, but sometimes you just need to get away.
Yes. It's reading should be enjoyable. So I'm with you. I read because I enjoy it, not because I feel like I have a goal when I'm reading. I read because I enjoy the story and things like that. So, I totally understand that. I'm not a Harry Potter, fantasy reader, but I know that that is a massive genre that I have a lot of friends who have enjoyed it. So you are not alone in that, which I'm sure you know. And then the last one is, when you think of someone that you look up to, what is a characteristic they possess that has led them to be successful? It doesn't have to be, you don't have to tell us the person if you don't want to, just like the characteristic.
Yeah. So I feel like there's always, kind of growing up in the beef industry, there's always those people that seem bigger than, they're always kind of know the answers to all the questions. And I think they're always curious about finding out what the next thing that needs to be answered is. So I think kind of staying curious is one thing that I really admire in a lot of the people that I look up to. And I think the ability to connect what happens in the real world to what we do from a research standpoint to make things applicable. There's a lot of scientists that I look up to that really, and I'm in the extension world. So there's a lot of extension specialists that I look up to, and I look at their careers and say, you know, I want to be like John Patterson when I grow up.
That's a good goal.
Right. In terms of the things that he did for the beef industry and kind of what spanned his career. And as he's, you know, so well known, and but he's so articulate and taken, you know, the research that we do at universities to things that relate in the real world to cattle producers. And I think that's ultimately the thing that we need to consider at the end of the day.
He is wonderful. I'm so glad you brought him up. He is just wonderful. I worked with him when I worked at NCBA, and he's just wonderful. Whenever I see him, whenever I'm out, you know, I'm sure same with you. You see him at a beef event and you just can't help but talk to him. He's just lovely and so smart and kind and welcoming. And yes.
So fun fact. So I grew up in South Louisiana. So between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, I went to LSU. When I started looking at grad school, being a Simmental girl, Dr. Jerry Lipsy was our executive vice president at the time. He connected me with Dr. Patterson to talk about doing a master's degree. So I actually had an opportunity to go to Bozeman, Montana, to Montana State, to do a master's. And I said, I don't think I can survive the winter in Bozeman, Montana. And I ended up at Texas A&M, and you know, the team that I got to work with there was fantastic. But every time I see him, he always gives me a hard time about the not being able to survive the winters in Montana. And I remind him that it can snow there in June.
Yeah, that's different. It's not like that in Texas.
No, it is not. It is not. It's not like that in Mississippi either.
Yeah. So. I will say, though, some people could not handle a South Texas or Mississippi or Louisiana summer.
And no.
So I would rather do the Bozeman winter than the Louisiana or Mississippi summer. So
yeah, that's for sure.
But that's great. He is absolutely wonderful. So, well, I want to thank you for being on the podcast today, Dr. Karsh. That is all the questions and time we have for today. But if listeners would like to have questions for you or want to learn more about our discussion today, where can they do that?
So our Beef Cattle Extension website here at Mississippi State University has kind of all of our contact information, everything that we have going on. It's extension.msstate.edu/beef.
I will put that in the footnotes for our guests, for our people who are listening on their mobile devices and want to look that up later. I will type the, because I didn't remember that all as you said it, but I will type it into the footnotes for our guests and our listeners. To go and check that out later. I just want to, again, thank you, Dr. Karsh, for being here. Thank you very much to Virbac for sponsoring this episode. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. And we'll meet you back here next week on the Beef Podcast.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.